From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News. Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week via Skype, Emily Tamkin, U.S. editor for The New Statesman, J.J. Green, national security correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA, and our moderator is Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome, everyone. Here is the issue. After a week that saw a riot led by supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump, that breached the U.S. Capitol building in an attempted overthrow of the government and left five people dead, history was made as the House of Representatives voted to impeach Trump for the second time. House members voted on one count of inciting violence against the government of the United States. The motion was approved by a vote of 232 to 197, a tally which included 10 members of Trump's own Republican Party, making it the most bipartisan impeachment vote in history. Democrats, speaking from the same floor, they were forced to flee for their lives just 1 week ago, made impassioned speeches demanding that the president be held accountable for inciting the unprecedented melee that tore through the Capitol. Republican arguments defending the president ranged from lukewarm to defiant. Notable among the 10 who voted to impeach was Representative Liz Cheney, a prominent figure in the Republican House delegation and daughter of former Vice President Dick Cheney. Trump, banned from the social media outlets that he has depended on throughout his political life, has been largely silent in the days following the insurrection, save for one public appearance where he professed that he had done, quote, nothing wrong. Following the impeachment vote, Trump released a statement disavowing the violence at the Capitol and bemoaning the social media ban, but making no mention of the impeachment vote. The article now goes to the Senate for a trial. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that he will not reconvene the Senate for an emergency session before Trump leaves office, leaving it to the incoming Democrat-led Senate to manage an impeachment trial at the same time it tries to launch the agenda of soon-to-be President Joe Biden. Emily, JJ, welcome. Good morning. And we keep saying it over and over again for 4 years, but we have unprecedented events to talk about today. The president being impeached twice, half the impeachments in U.S. history have the name of Donald Trump on them. I just want to jump right in with you, Emily. The charge that was a president, could you give like a brief explanation of what the charge is? And can charges be added to this, or is it likely to be just the one count that goes to the Senate?
So inciting an insurrection is, it kind of does what it says on the tin, right? He was charged with, I guess, to use a metaphor, sparking the fuse that led to the mob storming the Capitol in the weeks of denying the legitimacy of the election, and then more to the point in this rally that in calling his supporters to town on January 6th and having this rally and sort of whipping up the crowd. I think that it will probably just be this. I think the House wanted to sort of do it one and done and pass it along to the Senate. I would also just note that while it is historic that the president managed to get impeached twice in 1 4-year term, as he is leaving in a week anyway, the impact will really be felt if the Senate convicts, and convicts obviously not just to remove from office, but because he'll be gone, but convicts to bar him from ever holding office again. So history is still unfolding on this one.
JJ, let's go to you. We have the arguments for impeachment, the Democrats and the Republicans giving their respective positions on this. Were there any arguments or speeches on either side that stood out for you?
No. And considering that I stay away from politics, I would have to comment on this from a security point of view. What I heard from some people seemed to add credence to this divide or divorce from reality by some people. We all saw what happened. We all saw what led up to it. And as you mentioned, Michael, when we started this, we've been talking about this for years. And having been on this program for several years, certainly since 2016 or shortly thereafter, this has been a big topic. And that big topic being things like, quote, alternative facts, or things like the president's viewpoint, which is different from reality. And just basically the trafficking in lies. What took place on the floor was more of that in some situations where people didn't even address what took place in the president's speech, didn't even address what it essentially was doing, and, you know, did not connect it to what took place at the Capitol. Instead, we're talking about what Democrats do, how Democrats are, or how other political parties and other people act and what they've done, not addressing the critical point that faces this nation right now. So that's what I took most note of from many of the speeches that took place on the floor. There was this divide.
Yeah, and as you say, speaking from the security aspect, they were literally speaking from a crime scene, making these arguments. It was really just a stunning and affecting to watch. Emily, I'll turn to you with the same question. Of the speeches that you saw on the floor, both defending and indicting the president, were there any that stood out in your mind?
Yes, there were two on each side. So on the Democratic side, I was really struck by Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas saying, what do you think they would have done if they had gotten in? What do you think they would have done to you? And who do you think sent them here? That to me was chilling. It drove home how close Democrats and Republicans in Congress came to, you know, what happened on January 6th was horrible, but this recalled for me how much worse it could have been. The other one was Representative Jamie Raskin of Maryland, who said that it was a bit much to hear that the mob that tried to kill them would have been less angry had they been a little bit nicer. I think that that, to me, illustrated what I think rings hollow to many about this argument that, well, if you impeach, then we're not going to heal. If you impeach, then there won't be unity. If you impeach, then we're going to be really mad. And it's sort of like, well, you already stormed the Capitol, right? How much more anger and divisions there going to be. On the Republican side, you know, there were many who said, I think that this is an impeachable offense, but I don't think that it's right for the nation, or who said, well, let's have a bipartisan commission instead. I was struck, though, by Matt Gaetz of Florida, who got up and spoke about the Biden crime family, right? Just showing that there are still members of Congress who are not letting the conspiracy theories from the election go. And also Lee Zeldin from New York, who spoke about MS-13 and the embassy and Trump's moving the embassy to Jerusalem. And the reason I bring this up is just that I think that there were members who voted against impeaching Trump for whom the issue was not really impeachment. It was whether their political futures would be tied to Trump or not.
Yeah, there are some members who clearly are for Trump and to the end. They will literally ride that horse into the sunset. And they made that very clear with the speeches that they gave, which made virtually no mention, as you say, of a deadly attack, which is their place of business. Now, I want to stay with you, Emily, to talk a little bit about the president and the statements that he's given in the days since. It seems that there's sort of the seesaw of statements that he makes, where he said that he had done nothing wrong in a recent public appearance. And then later that same day, gives a statement saying that he denounces all violence and no one violent is a supporter of his. Which one of these represents the real Donald Trump?
You know, I'm a little surprised that every time he puts out one of these slightly calmer videos, people sort of go for it, right? And say that, well, now that was a good statement. And you know what? I think they're both Donald Trump, because the one is obviously the sort of the public showman Donald Trump that people who go to his rallies love. But the other is still Donald Trump, because he is telling people what he thinks they want to hear, which I think is also something that we've seen Trump do repeatedly as a candidate and as president.
JJ, we have this impeachment that has happened. We have had this process that's gone through the House of Representatives, and we're going to have a trial. How important is it for this to happen for national security? Can we actually count on a resolution of what is a growing domestic terrorist threat without holding people responsible for their actions, both the people who actually did the actions, who breached the walls, and the people who incited them to do it?
Yeah, I'd like to point out two things for your consideration on this. On the day this riot took place, we have video images of people with ropes, ladders, sledgehammers, hockey sticks, metal pipes, flex cuffs or zip ties, people with weapons, guns. Two pipe bombs were planted. More were found. Molotov cocktails were found. One police officer was beaten and dragged into a mob. We saw people breaking into a window of the Capitol, and they were using a police shield to do it. There is no way to uncouple this from national security, and there is no way that national security can be, I guess, restored until this is dealt with. And the reason why is because those people were supposedly protesters, but protesters don't carry around those items. How did they get to those items to the Capitol? How come nobody saw them? How did they get into the Capitol? How did they know where to go? To places that weren't identified or places that were nondescript. What were their motives once they got in there? This is a part of the problem that we're facing here. There's no way to deal with this without fixing some very serious blame to some very influential people. You know, I'm hinting at what's been called an inside job here. These folks had some help one way or another to get in there. And that is a direct impact on national security because these are members of Congress. One member, a former Secret Service deputy director, told me yesterday, the only way to prevent this from happening again is to declare any joint meeting of Congress a national special security event, just like the State of the Union is, just like the inaugural is, just like any meeting where you have a joint session of Congress because of the import of the people that are there at that time. The only way to deal with that is from a national security perspective. So that has to be dealt with as we look at this. And the other part of this, too, is where did this come from? It came from the commander in chief. And that's what the investigators are looking at right now. They believe that this was a call to action that was answered.
We'll come back to more of the inside job thread and see what type of collaboration may have happened. First, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more issues in the news.
Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype. Emily Tamkin, U.S. Editor for The New Statesman. J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA. And our moderator, Michael Williams, contributor to CBS Radio in Washington.
Welcome back to Issues in the News. Emily, I want to go to you. Mitch McConnell has been quoted as saying that he supports impeachment of President Trump and conviction. And he thinks that the Republican Party reportedly needs to make a break. A clean break from Trump. This is obviously new, hasn't happened before. He's been a staunch supporter of the president and the policies that he's put forward, the judges, all of these things. What has been the tipping point for McConnell? Is it really the policy? Was it something else? Was it really the sight of the violence? And what effectively can he do? Can he really make a break from Trump and still have a viable U.S. political party?
It's a really interesting question and also situation that we find ourselves unpacking here. One wonders if this had happened during Trump's term and not at the very, very end of it, if McConnell would be distancing himself similarly. I think a few things are going on here. First of all, while he did stand by for the many weeks that Trump was saying that the election had been stolen, you know, sort of refused to denounce the conspiracy theories, one might say created some of the conditions that led to the anger and frustration that we saw on January 6th, I can appreciate that seeing a mob storm your workplace can change one's mind. I think the cynical read is that they now have an opportunity to make it so that Trump can never hold office again. They can just get rid of this political opponent and sort of reclaim the Republican Party from Trump. The problem is, as we saw yesterday, there was much ado about the fact that Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney's daughter, this prominent figure in the Republican Party, was voting for impeachment. Well, only 9 House Republicans joined her, right? And so even if McConnell's privately suggesting that he supports impeachment, I don't know that he's going to get 16 other Republican senators to join him to get Democrats to that 2/3 majority. And the reason is that if you looked at the YouGov poll that came out right after the storming of the Capitol, 45% of Republicans supported the mob, and 85% of Republicans said they did not support the immediate removal of Trump. So Donald Trump Jr. said at the rally in the morning of January 6th that it's not establishment Republicans' Republican Party, it's his father's Republican Party. And I actually think that there is some truth in that. I think that many elected Republicans know that Trump still enjoys, or believe that Trump still enjoys a lot of support with their voters. So I don't know where the Republican Party goes from here. If these sort of quote-unquote establishment Republicans can claw back those voters, if they can actually purge Trump from the party, or if in letting this go on for 4 years, they've lost control.
Let me throw some more cynicism at you, Emily. In recent days, major corporations have said that they will withdraw and cease funding of Republican candidates going forward that have associated themselves with the Republican Party because of the violence at the Capitol. One could say that in that sense, Mitch McConnell might be even more anxious for a conviction of Donald Trump than Chuck Schumer, the incoming majority leader, if the corporate donor spigot is turned off by association with Trump. Thoughts?
I actually thought, I had this thought the other day, that they have to be more afraid of capitalism than Trump supporters to do this, right? So they have to be more, they have to be more convinced that their backers, that their mega donors and the companies that support them, they have to be more afraid that they're going to walk away than that Trump supporters are going to walk away. And right now, I'm not, I could be wrong. I'm just not sure that that's the calculation that most Republican senators have made at this point.
Okay. JJ, we have more troops right now in Washington, D.C. than we have in Afghanistan. The building where I work is completely surrounded by troops. There are military checkpoints that you would see when you're doing overseas reporting. It's, I'm not going to say unprecedented, because we've had 9/11. We've had other situations where we have seen National Guard here in the city, but I don't know that I've seen this many and have them on such a sense of high alert. What's the prospect for security here in the nation's capital going forward? Because people stormed the Capitol to interrupt a process, and that's essentially what happens every day in that building. There are processes that go on, and there are dozens, maybe hundreds of buildings in Washington, D.C. area where that same thing happened, where the process of government goes on. Going forward, how are we going to secure this city for an inauguration? And even after that, for just the business of everyday government?
Well, you know, I agree with what you said about the overseas thing. I looked at some of the security on Capitol Hill and looking through that fence, and I just saw these hundreds, then I guess looking at the totality of it, thousands of guards on the Capitol grounds and around the Capitol grounds. It reminded me of one time when I was in the Green Zone in Baghdad. And I thought, wow, this is just like that. The only thing that was different was the flag was a different type of flag and the buildings looked different. The prospect for security during the inauguration is nothing to worry about, because that is locked down and it's taken care of, because the Secret Service has been planning for this for a year or more. And this climate that we're in, nothing is being left to chance. Moving forward, people have been awakened by what took place. Even those who won't vote a certain way on the Hill in terms of impeachment or not, or people who won't acknowledge what really took place, the people who are responsible for their safety, they're not playing those games. The people that are responsible for the safety of members of Congress and for people in the city, and I would argue around the country, recognize that their jobs, their livelihoods, and their own lives are at stake if they don't get this right moving forward. So security moving forward, we're back in the same kind of place we were after 9/11, because I was at the VA building on 9/11, and I can recall standing on the roof watching the Pentagon burn, but that came after I had been warned by some people that I knew in law enforcement to get out of D.C. just before that plane crashed in Shanksville, which we later learned was intended for the Capitol. We're in that same mindset and situation now, because people are going to have to deal with what led up to this and how do we fix this. It's going to be a long, arduous process to get to the bottom of it. There are going to be hundreds of people arrested and most likely convicted, but they're not leaving anything to chance on the security front. And in terms of making Washington secure again, it will happen.
Emily, from a security and political standpoint, the countries in Europe during the 80s especially dealt with violent factions within their own government, within their own country. We think of the Red Army. We think of the Basque separatist movement that had kidnappings, bombings, murders, these sorts of things. They were long-term things. These lasted for years and years and years. They were finally excised from that society, from those governments, but they lasted for years and years. Is the feeling around Washington among the political class that this is something that is more of a brief thing, more of a thing that sort of fades away as Trump leaves office? Or are we in for something more akin to what the European nations went through during the 80s period?
I think before January 6th, there were many people who believed that this was going to be over on January 20th, that the kind of rhetoric and conspiracy theory and the sort of threats to members of your own party, that that was going to go away when Donald Trump stopped being president. I think that January 6th drove home for a lot of people that this is not going away. And a difference from some of the European situations that you've just mentioned is that this is one of our two major political parties. I think that the Republican Party has a long road ahead of it. A new member of the Republican Party just said that she's going to bring articles of impeachment against Joe Biden on January 21st, right? So there's still this fervor for Trump and this desire to fight Biden. And I think that the polarization, the intensity of the grievance on some sides is not going away. I think a concern is that unless there is accountability for those who stormed the Capitol and those who incited the storming of the Capitol, that this could happen. This could easily happen again.
And the Democrats, Emily, are going to have a real balancing act when they come back into session. You're going to have an incoming president who has an agenda, who has, by nature, a desire to cooperate across the aisle. It's sort of his hallmark of his governing style. And then you have to balance this positioning of his political agenda with a trial of the former president. How can the Democrats sort of handle this balancing act? Is there a thought even to delaying having the trial until maybe after the first 100 days of the Biden administration to give it a chance to get up and on its feet?
They have a real, I mean, we've been talking about divisions in the Republican Party, but the Democrats have this massive task ahead of them, in particular Joe Biden. I know that he was reportedly asking Mitch McConnell and trying to get an answer from the Senate parliamentarian if they could perhaps do a half-day split where half of the day is on the impeachment trial and then the other half of the day is dedicated to getting some of his nominees through the nomination process and into their jobs. The thing is that he had a massive task ahead of this before January 6th. He had the economy. He had vaccinations. We have thousands of people dying every day from COVID-19. He had going back to allies and saying, sorry, Foreign Minister of Luxembourg, that you refused to see Mike Pompeo, you know, in the last week. But if we could reestablish ties between the U.S. and Europe, all of this had to happen. And now Biden also has this. I think they will probably try to find a way to either get through the impeachment trial quickly or to have it be only part of the day or to have it so that it's not the only thing that the Biden administration is doing for the first 100 days. I will say that I think that if a mob had not stormed the Capitol, I think Biden's inclination very much would have been to try to move forward and focus on the future. But I think events clearly have forced his hand because the House impeached Trump. And so now you sort of have to deal with the past before you can look only to the future.
Dealing with that as part of moving forward. JJ, I just want to ask you about the ongoing investigations now. We've had dozens of people arrested, identified, and case files opened by the FBI. There are also reports that you alluded to earlier, there being collaboration possibly with government officials and police who may have helped the insurrection by giving even guided tours to riot people who would turn out to be leaders of the riots the next day, congressmen or congressman's staff, congressional staff. What is going to be the punishment for people who are found to have been collaborators? What happens to someone if we find out that's true?
Some people are facing the possibility of years in jail, in prison. You know, it really depends on what's found out. So I can't really answer that question, you know, from a general point of view. It was a crime. You know, that's a crime scene, as you mentioned earlier. This is a situation where there was everything from simple trespassing to assault. There was murder. There are firearms in there. You know, as you mentioned, there are situations where people say that they believe that there are members of Congress or staff that brought people in the day before to give them what they call reconnaissance tours to find places and people. These are very serious charges. And so you're talking about the possibility of prison time for some people if they are found to have done something like this. Certainly, if you're a representative or a staffer who helped facilitate something that led to murder. The other thing that I think sort of puts this into perspective, too, I still haven't confirmed this yet, but there are reports that in one particular staffer's office, Ayanna Pressley, there were panic buttons that they had installed in the office that they said they reached for those panic buttons during this problem, during this event, during this situation, and they weren't there. Those buttons had been ripped out. The chief of staff for Representative Pressley told the Boston Globe that those buttons had been torn away. If this is true, this is not something that protesters did the day of this rally. They say this had to have happened before the riots took place. So there are some very serious charges, and I would imagine very serious time if people are found to have collaborated with the people who committed those crimes in the Capitol.
I know it's unprecedented times we keep saying that, but I thank you all for really addressing these things with such insight and such knowledge and such calm. It becomes very personal when it's here in Washington, D.C. amongst us. And again, I appreciate your candor and your expertise. That is all the time we have. Thanks to our panelists, Emily Tamkin, U.S. Editor for The New Statesman, and J.J. Green, National Security Correspondent for WTOP and host of Target USA. This program is produced by The Voice of America. I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.